2 weeks ago had his prized Rolls Royce repossessed.
Just smash that juice box, as I did on Spike Television.
George here is selling Wolf tickets. Dana here is selling Wolf tickets. The UFC is selling some Wolf tickets. You guys are eating them right up.
So I walked in my bathroom, took my clothes off. He walked into the bathroom with me and watched me shower.
Did it ever cross your mind, taking a clear substance in a blue vial from a friend that came from Thailand with a fighter of your stature and all that you have on the line and all that you've come back from, might not be a good move?
I shouldn't have came back. I shouldn't have been in the ring tonight.
Okay.
I'm eating dinner.
What are you eating?
Turkey, mashed potatoes, and some bread.
Like, what kind of turkey? Like cold cuts, or like what are you doing?
You can get it at Walmart. It's really good. It's it's like a turkey loaf, they call it.
Okay, so it's like breast meat.
Yeah, pretty much. I think, I don't know. It's just delicious.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's all I got.
All right.
I've been up since 5:30, so let's do this shit.
All right. So welcome, everybody, to MMA and stuff. I am Matt Grady. You just heard from my partner in crime there, Michael Coughlin, who's eating dinner while recording this fabulous podcast. My first question to you is, are you getting excited for the upcoming presidential inauguration?
As much as almost anything in my life. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be hilarious. I love to watch people cry and be sad. So this is double fun that way. From where I work downtown in Chicago, I can just peek my head out and I can see Trump Tower. So I'm just going to be hoping to see a bunch of people yelling at bricks. That's my new favorite thing. People protesting his buildings. Not him, just his buildings. They're just yelling at stone. And some poor bastard is probably like an illegal immigrant cleaning the bathrooms in this place. They're yelling at him. He's like, I just want to fucking, you know, go to work. I don't care. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it a lot.
It'll be very entertaining, I'm sure, in more ways than one. So we'll do what we typically do here on MMA and stuff. We'll talk about events from the past weekend, then move on to this week's news and do a little preview for the upcoming Bellator show on Saturday. But this past weekend, the big show was on Sunday night. We had UFC Fight Night Rodriguez first 10 from the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix, Arizona, with a attendance of 11,589 and the gate of $900,000. In the main event, Yair Rodriguez.
Yes. I'm going to say, right off the bat, when you hear numbers like that for a Fight Night shit show, Phoenix really better be getting a pay-per-view soon. Because those are, I mean, you're doing $900,000 for a Fight Night. That's a lot. That's a big, big gate. Like, you know, some of their casino shows are having trouble doing that. So they need to have Ryan Bader headline something there on a pay-per-view.
maybe. If he signs back with UFC, sure. So in the main event of the show, Yair Rodriguez smoked BJ Penn, beaten by TKO in the second round, 24 seconds in. Kind of went the way I thought it would. I know people were pulling for Penn and thought maybe he had one more fight in him, but that was not the case on Sunday. Really just got destroyed by the younger, quicker, stronger fighter. Penn looked, I hate to say it, but like a shot fighter. He wasn't throwing much. He was just taking head kicks and body kicks and punches and not throwing much back. Really had no offense and no answers for Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, it was sad. He didn't fight like BJ Penn fights. He wasn't as dumb as his weird style before with Frankie Edgar, but his overall stance and the way he approached things was not the way he looked in his prime. He had a much more square stance, and I think he was, I'm guessing just so he could maybe see some of the kicks coming better and, go for takedowns. Because usually, again, he used to have a very traditional boxer stance, lots of jabs, things like this. This time he seemed like he was more interested in loading up on shots, and maybe that's just because he knows that's all he's got. Again, he's just fighting a guy who is, it's amazing. I watched the fight. I'm like, BJ's a dude that won a title at the previous two weight classes, and he looked way smaller than Yair. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm wondering, like, does BJ Penn not understand that you can, like, sweat out weight in a sauna or something? Does he always, he has to come in at the exact weight? Otherwise, he's 38 years old and moving around in weight, and, you know, he doesn't have it. It's gone. You put him up at lightweight, would be, the only chance he really has is probably, like, at lightweight or welterweight just due to his style, where he maybe be a little quicker than those guys. But otherwise, I mean, it's done.
It's over. Yeah, I mean, I thought after that last Edgar fight, it was over. I just think it's the cumulative effect of some of these beatings he's taken, and people forget because it's been a couple years. But like the Diaz fight and the Rory McDonald fight, it's like he took beatings in those fights, and he was already a little long in the tooth then, and it's like that didn't do him any favors, and now he's just even older and slower, and it's kind of sad. You don't like to see that for any fighter, especially for BJ, because he was the kind of guy who would go up and fight Lyoto Machida and just take these crazy fights and push prime George St. Pierre to the edge. But those days are long gone, and I think some of it was because he was fighting those bigger guys in long fights. I saw some stat that he's taken more shots, more punches than any fighter in UFC history.
That wouldn't surprise me just because of how long he's been around, but it's actually kind of surprising given how dominant he was all those years. I'm chewing.
yep.
Like, I would have thought, like, maybe, like, Chris Lieben would have just accumulated a shit ton during his tenure.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the guy's just, he's old. He's just old. You know, I will say this for him. Before the fight started, it was a BJ Penn fight in the sense of, for one last night, like, BJ Penn's entire career has been about unfulfilled potential. Even when he wins the world title and defends it and is a monster, we're always kind of like, hey, he's finally doing it, but can he do even more? And it was like, for one last time, he's like trying to sell everybody. Like, that's what BJ Penn has sold in his career more than his fights and everything. It's, are we going to see the best BJ Penn? And there was like that little spark of, all right, he's down at 145. It's a guy who's not super fast, so maybe this kind of works as a matchup. He's training for real now. Again, only Vitor Belfort gets more mileage out of that, but he's at Greg Jackson, and he looks like he's in shape, and then the illusion's gone, and he's not even competitive anymore. Like, at least in almost all of his other fights, except for the last Edgar fight, there were periods of the fight where BJ did well. Like, you know, mm-hmm. when he fought Rory McDonald, the first round, he did very well. Sure. Same with Nick. Like, there was this kind of like, okay, these guys are bigger, they're weighing on him, whatever. But now it's just, from the very moment the fight started, it was clear BJ wasn't doing shit, and Yair was just a totally different level.
Yeah. Yeah, people get old. It happens. It happens to everybody. It's just the nature of the beast. Well, what do you see next for Yair? Is this like a star-making performance, or did he just beat an old guy past his prime? Where does he go from here?
I think it's a big deal. I think it really is, because it's kind of like with Cody Garbrandt, where almost got it down. Okay. Normally, the fight wouldn't necessarily be a star-making performance. Yes, he beat a good name and all these things, but I don't think Yair has, like, that real natural thing about him. But when they hype guys up the way they did, where every promo, like, I was watching football all day, and, like, every promo, it was Joe Buck saying, like, you know, rising superstar and mega hot prospect, Yair Rodriguez. And, like, when you hear that over and over and over again, and then he goes out there and he totally delivers and then some, that's the kind of thing I think can kind of stick with people. He seems to have some sort of charisma. I don't know. You know, again, I don't know shit about how he really speaks. I don't speak Spanish. But, you know, he's got a style. He's got a really great style. Good look. He's young. And he's undefeated. And he just got a huge win. Now is the time for him to really have to step up and prove himself. You know, he's had some winnable fights in the past. So now he's got to get into that real, you know, that fucking deep-ass featherweight division where, Man, you go from, I mean, if you want to call BJ Penn a guppy, the rest of these guys are true sharks out there.
Who would you like to see him fight next?
I have no idea off the top of my head. Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
You know, Stephens is up there. He's ranked. He's a tough matchup for most people. He's the kind of guy that if Yair wants to have a chance at a championship, you got to get by Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the rankings now. Stevens is ranked fifth in the division. He's up there higher than I realized.
Do Cub Swanson.
I was thinking Swanson. I know he's coming off a loss, but Juho Choi would be a fun fight. I was even thinking somebody like Brian Ortega because he's kind of got the ground game. It would kind of see how good Rodriguez is with, you know, takedown defense, that sort of thing.
You could do the winner of Bermudez and Korean Zombie.
That'd be good. Yeah, so, that's so good too.
There's basically, for a guy who's, I think, ranked number 10, I don't know if he's still 10 or whatever, there's a lot of really good name fights that should be entertaining that he can really go from here. So the sky's the limit there.
Yeah, Pettis would be fun too.
He's done at 45, though.
Oh, is he definitely moving up back up to 55?
That's what he kind of said when he made his excuse. So.
Okay. Anything left for Penn? Do you see him trying to get another fight? I mean, where's he go from here? Back to Hawaii and making taro chips or whatever he does?
He's such a weirdo. Like, some part of me, like, I look at BJ and like, yeah, this is a guy that will, like, go fighting to his 60s because he just loves it and wants to always prove himself. But he's also a guy that's been, you know, he's retired before, which tells me he's at one time in his life tried at least to accept the idea of, I don't have it. And, you know, maybe he goes, this time I don't have it. And by the time comes when it's, he gets that bug to go fight again, he'll be 41 or something. He'll get in the gym and be like, oh, nope, fuck this. I'm just going to go and smoke weed and eat coconuts and live my life.
It'd be interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing him in, like, you know, the Eddie Bravo stuff or some of that submission grappling, because it wouldn't be like he'd be taking shots to the head. And he's got this legendary, you know, jiu-jitsu background. Granted, you don't see much of it anymore in the UFC in his last, you know, 8 or 9 years in the company. But, that could be something to keep the competitive juices flowing. And I would watch that, but... we'll see what happens with Penn, but hopefully he will not be getting punched in the head anymore in an MMA cage, whether it's UFC or Bellator or anywhere. In the semi-main event, we had Joe Lauzon defeating Marcin Held by split decision. The scores were 30-27 Held, then 29-28, 29-28 Lauzon. Personally, I scored it for Held, 29-28. There was a lot of people.
Not just you. Joe Lauzon scored it for Held.
Yeah, I mean, what was your takeaway from the fight?
I had Held winning the fight. Like, I wasn't doing round by round per se, but just overall as a fight, I'm like, he's just beating Joe Lauzon. Like, on the feet, he really surprised me. He did very well. I thought Lauzon.
I mean, Held, even in the previous fight with Sanchez, Held looked good on the feet. He didn't seem confident in it, though, and he reverted back to the ground game and going for the leg locks. Yeah. But I feel like Held's kind of an underrated striker where, granted, Diego and Lauzon are both, you know, past their primes. You don't like to say it, but both in their, you know, early to mid-30s and have been in a lot of wars. Held's kind of that next generation. He's only 24, and he like you said, he just looked a little quicker, a little stronger.
I saw Joe Lauzon. It seemed like he just aged overnight. Like, when this fight, I'm watching it going, this is not the Joe Lauzon of the past. Like, he just didn't have the explosiveness in his punches. And on the ground, I mean, Marcin Held is, you know, real, real legit. The dude's trained at Rufus Sport a lot. And, like, he's not just – I thought most impressive in this fight was he showed that he's not just leg locks. He's, you know, obviously dangerous with them, but he did outstanding top control of Joe Lauzon. And when the fight was over, I'm like, watch it, going like, yeah, he didn't do a lot of damage on the ground, but I'm sorry. I think people are almost swinging the pendulum too far to the, well, don't count any time on top unless he hits him real hard or something. It's like, no, like,
that wears on a dude. Like, you can just, I can take, well, when I train, you know, you can take somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing, and within a minute of just being on top of them, they'll want to vomit. So, like, you know, there's a skill involved there, and you can wear people down. Those little shots kind of do damage. And, again, Joe Lozon immediately, like, the first thing he said was, oh, I lost that fight. I know what it's like to be screwed, and that guy got screwed. Like, that was really, I thought that was really cool, Lozon. I don't think he's going to be giving his win purse away, but still cool nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Lozon, I mean, the fight that really told me he was kind of had plateaued or maybe was on the other side of the mountain was the Evan Dunham loss. He just looked so bad in that fight. Like, he had nothing and was slow. Then he had the win over Sanchez, which was quick and a knockout. Then he had the loss to Miller. And now this sort of win over Held. It's like, he's still competitive. Like, I felt like he didn't get, like, dominated on the ground. He looked calm and Held had his back a couple times, and Lozon was just, like, totally comfortable just watching it on the big screen. So, I think Held probably won that fight. I hope he doesn't get cut after this. I can't imagine they would cut him. He is 0-2 in the UFC now, but both losses were a little – they were super competitive, and especially the Lozon fight, he probably should have got the decision.
Yeah, I mean, just from, like, a justice sake, you don't want to cut the guy. But I also think it would be a mistake. I mean, he – Marcin Held's been in Bellator before, but I think he's only had his stock go up since then. And, you know, if I'm Bellator, I'd grab him up again if I could. And because, like, I think he actually let his contract with Bellator expire and chose to go to the UFC, maybe for less money, because he wanted the, you know, the challenge of it all, because 24-year-olds don't have mortgages. So, I mean, I think, you know, if he sucked or if I didn't see a lot of talent or he was boring, it'd be one thing, you'd be fine. 0-2, I got my excuse. But I think, you know, you got a guy with a lot of potential. Not world champion potential, but, you know, solid professional, you know, Gleison Tibau level potential. So, you know, Marcin Held could be on the cusp, the beginning of a 10-year career of kind of being the new Joe Lozon.
Could be. Time will tell. Prior to that, we had Ben Saunders defeating Court McGee by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three cards. Not a lot to say there. This was a real close fight, too. A lot of people had it for McGee. The second and third rounds were pretty close. Not a lot to say. Saunders with the typical.
Cares.
Okay. In the opener, we had Sergio Pettis beat John Moraga by unanimous decision as well, 29-28 on two cards, and then 30-27 on the third. Pettis looked good. He looked a little quicker than Moraga. The one thing I noticed big time in this fight is Pettis took a lot of shots and didn't really flinch. Like, Moraga's a pretty hard hitter for a flyweight. He's knocked a bunch of dudes out in the UFC. It was like, Pettis could take those shots no problem. Long term, is it good for him? Probably not. Does he want to be going to all these decisions early in his career? Maybe, maybe not. It's good to get some ring time in, but that was a tough fight. He won it, but he took a lot of shots doing it.
Well, you know, at flyweight, with very few exceptions, you're going to probably pretty much be getting in a lot of rounds in your career no matter what. But I thought coming out of this that Pettis did more to maybe elevate himself than anyone. Just as far as, like, when this was over, I thought, wow, Sergio Pettis, you know, he put it together in this fight. I mean, Moraga is a former title challenger, and I saw Pettis as basically, I don't want to say cruising through the fight because he did take shots, but on the feet, he was so much more technical and so far ahead, and he was able to stuff Moraga's takedowns. Moraga's at the University of Arizona. He's on that, I think he may have wrestled with Velasquez, but he's got a good NC, you know, he's got a Division I wrestling pedigree, and he's used it at times, and Pettis didn't really have a lot of trouble with it, and even when he was down, he was able to get out of things and move up to his feet. You know, he still is going to have a problem that he's got a lot of a variety of strikes, just like Anthony Pettis, but he's just so small that he doesn't have the ability to really do a ton of damage with them, with the exception of maybe a kick or a knee or something like that. But, you know, I think Sergio Pettis is right there. I mean, if he's not top 10, he's top 10 for me right now and is, you know, two good wins away from a title shot and maybe one just with his name.
Yeah, no, I agree, especially in that division where you know, Mighty Mouse has wiped out most of the division. He needs fresh opponents. So, yeah, another win or two, Pettis would be right there for sure, especially if they're impressive. And he's only 23. He feels like you've been hearing about him for 5-6 years. But it's like the one thing that makes me concerned a little bit, and it's just a little bit, and you never know how guys are going to respond, but all 6 of his wins in the UFC by unanimous decision all went to, you know, 15 minutes. It's like when he fights, he's in there a long time, and he's put miles on himself at an early age. You'd like to see him get some finishes and some easy wins and show some advancement in that way. Granted, he won. It wasn't like it was a close fight. But I'd love to see him get a couple finishes here or there, because every single one of his fights, whether it's Moraga, even got Matt Hobar, he beat by a decision. I mean, Campuzano, guys you would think he might be able to finish. He's never done it in the UFC.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of it's the curse of two things with him. Obviously, having an older brother that was a megastar, your prospect status instantly gets elevated. And beyond that, it's also the fact that he fights in a division that's so desperate to find talent. So when, you know, they find a guy who looks like he's pretty damn good at 125 pounds, they're just grabbing him. And even if, you know, if his name was Joe Blow, I was going to say Joe Smith, I think there's like 4 of those in the UFC. If his name was Joe, ooh, doggies are barking at each other. Joe, you know, he'd probably be in the UFC pretty, you know, by now or would have been already. So, yeah, it's just the nature of the beast. But, you know, again, he's winning. And with his pedigree, so long as he doesn't get screwed up. Because, you know, again, like, because I say that, and the first thing I think of is the Diaz brothers. They're both in the UFC so young. But Nick was, like, a really, in a weird way, he's an excellent role model for Nate. Yeah, they have their issues with drugs and starting riots, but when you ignore the rioting, Nick Diaz is a pretty he's kind of what you would want out of an older brother when you consider that Nate was already going to be a pothead and do all that shit anyways. So he just had this perfect pothead role model, and all it really did was keep on a pretty damn good straight and narrow. These guys, you don't hear about the Diaz brothers having, you know, lots of girlfriends and drug problems, I mean, real drug problems, and their houses being set on fire. Like, I don't know how the Diaz brothers haven't had somebody commit arson against them, but they haven't. And they pretty much just go to the gym and train, and when they're not in the gym training, they're doing triathlons. Like, that's a really good attitude to have, whereas I think Anthony Pettis is out there partying, he owns his own barber shop and shit, like I don't know why a fucking grown man who has a haircut that I basically do to myself every week and a half needs his own private barber shop, but whatever. I think Sergio Pettis could be exposed to too much of, like, the real success of the business early, whereas, again, the Diaz brothers, you know, even though Nick was great for years and everybody knew it, he wasn't making huge bank and he wasn't a big star and kind of a little bit of a different time. So I guess what I'm really saying is that Sergio Pettis needs to move away and delete his brother's phone number.
You know what? Or you could look at it this way. Maybe he was there for the rise of his brother, and you don't want to say the fall of Anthony Pettis has happened. But, I mean, obviously he's dropped off, and he's had several tough losses recently. Maybe he's seen some of the stuff Anthony did, and maybe he will try and avoid some of it. Granted, that might be wishful thinking, but sometimes you see a family member or brother or whatever, you see him fuck up and you say, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, my brother does that all the time. It's very obvious. And I know what you're saying.
That's not what I was hinting at that. I didn't know if you were going to pick up on it.
Everybody knows my situation. Yeah. But yeah, I will say, though, that Sergio just seems kind of, I don't know, what we've seen so far, he seems like he's very beholden to his brother.
Sure.
And, like, he wants to imitate him. Like, god damn, they got, like, the same exact tattoos. And those are ugly tattoos. It's not like you and your brother each got, like, some badass flaming ghost rider on a horse or some shit like that. It's like, it's a fucking drawing. They don't draw people's detailed faces for a tattoo. One in, like, 1,000 people can pull it off. And most of the time, it just looks like you got a fat blob on your chest, especially if, like, their mom, maybe she was fat, so that's why they got, like, these fatty-looking people on there. I don't know. Just, oh, this is so fucking weird. Like,
yeah,
the exact same tattoos. I don't get that one.
Neither do I. On the undercard, not a whole heck of a lot stood out, but I did want to ask you about one fight. Alexei Oleinik defeated Victor Pesta on the Fox Sports 1 prelim card.
I knew I was getting asked about this.
By Ezekiel Choke. This was the first time anyone's ever won a fight via this maneuver, as Vince McMahon would call it. What a maneuver. It was really odd, especially because Pesta, if I went back and watched this fight a second time. Let's back up a little bit. And it was like Oleinik almost, I felt like, baited him into it. He, like, let Pesta take him down, and he essentially let him get full mount, but kind of worked in this Ezekiel choke, which has never been done in the UFC, and I've never seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've never seen anybody get submitted from it when they're on top in mount, which is the most dominant position you can have on the ground. How did Oleinik do this? Is Pesta just an idiot, or is Oleinik he's got 8 wins by Ezekiel choke, so obviously he's got a knack for it, but it was just odd because of Pesta's position. But you can probably talk a little better on this than I can.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pull up exactly, because I a guy who does some radio and does MMA stuff, and he kind of asked me, he goes, what the fuck's going on? And he asked me, why do you think we've never seen this choke before? And,
sure.
I responded, it basically doesn't work. Even in a even in a gi, that would basically be impossible.
It's like a white belt sort of thing, right?
It is exactly something that only a black belt would catch on a white belt. I don't think a black belt could catch that on a blue belt. It's from that position. I mean,
okay.
There's something called the baseball choke, which is basically both hands on the side. Like, you have one hand on each side of their neck, and like holding the back of their gi, like a baseball bat, with your hands, and you can choke guys that way. And there's a guy who's really famous. I can't think of his name right now. He's Brazilian. And he actually will bait people into the baseball choke, because what happens is that's a choke where as the guy gets closer to you, if he gets around your guard, side control, even into mount, the closer, the more he advances, actually the tighter it gets. But this is something that, again, if he was on top inside somebody's guard and he tried to do this again, and I'm talking in even in a gi, especially in no gi, I'll get to the no gi thing in a second, but especially in a gi, it would be really, really difficult, because all the opponent has to do is extend his hips. You know, he just has to extend his hips forward and break the choke. So in theory, all Puska, whatever, needed to do, Jiska, whatever, was roll him and get on top. Or I should say, put himself on bottom and then just extend his hips out. It's something where if somebody's inside of your guard and they're trying this to you, you will look for it, because it's kind of one of those rules where don't put your hands on the mat and don't grab behind a guy's head, because you're opening yourself up for an armbar. Like, this is actually one of the things, like, I remember once hearing a professor say, like, if anybody gets choked out with this from inside of the guard, I'm demoting you. I'm just going to take a stripe. I'm going to take away your belt or something like that. Like, it's that basic. As for why it worked here, like, basically, the dude is strong as hell. The guy wasn't expecting it. And it was so early that you have to be super dry to get that in there and lock it. And then, you know, just caught the guy off guard. And the guy probably just panicked. Is obviously, I think it's fair to say, not adept at jiu-jitsu. I think no matter how big and strong you are, if you grab this on a real, like, or Hodger Gracie or something like that, they would instinctively be able to, like, okay, I know how to relax a little bit here, because there's an art to relaxing on choke. So it was weird. It was never before seen, although I guess this is this guy's specialty in life. But, you know, everybody's got something. Fucking what's-his-face? Brad Imes is pulling off go-go platas all the time. But nobody knew what that was about. So, yeah, it basically shouldn't happen, and I place a lot of it more on just a combination of his opponent didn't really – it wasn't well-versed in jiu-jitsu. And you can see this is why you have to learn why moves work, not just what to do. Because then you understand the leverage, you understand why something's happening to you and how you get out of that, combined with a guy that obviously practices it and is super strong. And, you know, some guys just – Cody McKenzie's got his guillotine and things like that. Giovanni Santos, the armbar collector. Some guys do have techniques. Paul Sass and Triangle. I'm sure this guy works this a ton, but, go ahead and try it on Velasquez. You know, you're just going to get the shit pounded out of you. So it's fine. It's fun for what it was, and then we'll move on with life.
Which submission loss is more embarrassing? This one with Pesta or Sage Northcutt and Brian Barberina?
Oh.
Good question, right?
Yeah. Northcutt quit, and you can say he was sick, and maybe he wasn't. He couldn't breathe for that reason. What happened to Northcutt, that can happen to you from time to time from a really, really strong dude. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case there. I think he would have eventually got caught by it, and that's just a traditional submission. This was, even if you don't know a lot of jiu-jitsu, like some dude's choking you and you're on top, you would just, like, move. You would, like, at least go to your back. Like, you see a lot of people, you don't have to be an expert to know, like, guys get caught in a guillotine, one of the defenses is go to your back. You can still get finished, but at least you're doing something. Pesta didn't even, like, move. He just, like, oh, I'm being choked. Like, I better tap. Like, Sage, Sage is 19 and is a puppy dog, so I can't fault him too much. He's a good doggy. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Fight of the night went to Augusto Mendez versus Frankie Saenz. Then performance of the night were Yair and Olenek. Anything else to note on this card?
I wouldn't have given those two guys fight of the night. I thought Walt Harris looked pretty good with a mega knockout of Chase Sherman. And Walt Harris is going to be one of those guys that's going to be around for a while in the UFC because he's a heavyweight. He has just ridiculous potential. I don't think he's going to probably ever really live up to it. Just my guess. But just because of what he could be, he'll always be there. It's performances like this, which are why. Because you look and you go, holy shit. Like, he just looks so smooth and fantastic on his feet. I thought, he had a pretty decent performance. Got to give props. I hate saying props. Ugh. To Amanda Nunes' girlfriend there, Nina Ansaroff, got her first win in the UFC. Nothing like having the champion, a division up, or two divisions up, publicly calling you out over and over, saying, you're awesome, you're going to do great, you're awesome, you're going to do great. It's like, oh, you better do well there. And the rest of the show sucked. By the way, as we're recapping things, not to go through it fight by fight, what did not suck, Invicta was one of the best shows, like, top to bottom. Like,
sure,
you had some of the absolutely most bonkers, batshit crazy finishes ever, including a chick getting choked unconscious and holding out, and the bell rang to end the fight, and when her opponent released the choke, she was out cold, but she still won the fight. In the same fight where she had already tapped out once, right as the bell sounded, we had people getting knocked. I mean, this show had everything, and it was really good fights, the personality, and damn, I enjoyed watching that bad boy.
Yeah, I didn't see the whole card. I saw some of the finishes, but in the main event, with Lady Cyborg out indefinitely, Megan Anderson defeated Charmaine Tweet by TKO in the second round to win the interim Invicta featherweight title. Thoughts on Anderson's performance?
She did what she needed to do. She went out there. She was billed as a heavy favorite. Everyone expected her to dominate, and she did. She just ran right through her, looked like a champion, if you will, and good for her. She did what she had to do, or whatever you want to say. So, good on her.
You think she'd be competitive with Cyborg at this point?
No.
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 I feel like she takes some shots. You know what I mean? Like, she's a hard hitter. She's strong for that division. I mean, she's 6 feet tall. She's a big lady. Matter if you know what I'm saying. And
yeah, I do. Giant. I mean, clit. Oh yeah. What's up, bro? I made that awkward. So yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I mean, you don't see a lot of women 6 feet tall.
No, and she
fights in general.
And she fights. She doesn't use her. She's got a lot to improve on. But if she does, she's got the potential to really be something. But you know, just right now, like again with Cyborg. Cyborg is just so much more of an advanced striker, and
sure. She's
genuinely, I mean, it's not a joke. Like, she's a man. She, you know, the way that she hits, it's insane. Right. So, you know, it's really tough to think that any woman's going to be able to withstand that kind of a beating. But, you know, somebody like Holly Holm, Holly's tough because she's, you know, she's very technical. But I could see Megan Anderson in maybe a year, a little more seasoning, competing with her. I mean, she's probably already one of the top five featherweights in the UFC's women division. So, you know, good for her.
I mean, she only made her debut in November 2013. She's only been fighting just over 3 years. So
yeah, and she owes me an interview, too.
So we'll see how she turns out. I mean, with Cyborg getting older and a couple more years of experience for Anderson, maybe she'll be the one to beat Cyborg. What else? Anything else? Anybody else impress you on the Invicta card that we should look out for down the road?
Angela KGB Lee, friend of the show, came out. She'd been out for a while because of her, diuretic PED failure. She came out like a house of fucking cards and absolutely
looked fire or house of cards?
Well, of cards on fire. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of weird. That implies, well, actually, she is maybe a house of cards. She looks really impressive, but it's shaky foundation. But yeah, I mean, she looked really, really good. That's a pretty fucking good analogy, metaphor. Whatever I'm trying to say. Comparing two things that are not like to. Blah, blah. But yeah, her striking looked right on point. She would look very aggressive. Actually, you know, a lot of chicks, Raquel Paulette, I can't say the name, beat Pani Kianzad in the first round, tapping her out real quick, and, you know, that was legit. Aspen Ladd came out against Sarah Eubanks. Eubanks was a jiu-jitsu world champion type, and Aspen Ladd just lit her up. Like, I already mentioned KGB Lee. That fight didn't happen. That fight was the weird fight that had every decision in the world. Rachel Ostovich took on Christine Ferreira. Ferreira knocked her out with a brutal, brutal head kick. Although the thing to note from this fight, and I know it's only sound like a pig, was Rachel Ostovich, who is now married, had the biggest fucking jugs of all time for a 125-pound woman. I mean, I'm looking and going, what? And like a badonkadonk ass, too. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, she got the booty and the tits of a 150-pounder. Like, it was just like, what the? It was really awkward. And you know what? The chick that may have been the most impressive of all was Leah Letson. She took on Elizabeth Phillips. Kind of a late fight. Phillips was formerly in the UFC. Letson came out. She's in the Army. So she's got to go back to deployment because Trump's got to kill somebody. But she knocked Phillips out with a left high kick of death, like Crow Cop style murder. So good for her. Yeah, I was most, I don't know who I was most impressed by, but overall it was a show. I mean, again, I can't speak highly enough about it.
Good, good. In other shows that you probably won't care too much about, it was announced the new coaches for The Ultimate Fighter are going to be Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. This is rumored to be a welterweight season with former UFC fighters returning to the show. Rumored names include Junie Browning, Joe Stevenson, James Krause, Mehdi Bagdad, Ramzi Nijem, and Mike Ricci. Does this interest you?
No, not at all. Like, I'm interested to see Garbrandt and Dillashaw. I think that'll be fun. But yeah. I didn't – Like, and I knew that they were like, oh, it's going to be former UFC fighters. And like, and then they kept saying, and one guy who's currently on the roster. I'm like, what the fuck cares? That's not a big deal. Like, you're going to make some poor bastard have to sacrifice part of his career to live in a house. You're like, oh, well, if you want to do it, Neil Magny or whomever. But, I mean, again, the coaches had me really excited. That seems like it could be a lot of fun. I kind of wrote up a little bit about that, and it's like the perfect storm of the legitimate number one contender, the legitimate champion, and they really have, like, they don't like each other, and they have a really good storyline, and Garbrandt in particular has been building it up from his end for a long, long time. You know, he was the guy that stayed loyal. Everybody else from Team Alpha Male has kind of migrated up to Ludwig and train. Like, you know, Benavidez, he trains at Alpha Male. Those are his coaches, but he'll go up to Elevation and train. So with some of the other dudes, Garbrandt won't. He just stays here with Uriah and only Uriah, and now he's going to fight the Judas. And it's like if, you know, the Bible after Jesus died, if Peter showed up and just beat the shit out of Judas. Like, that'd be like a big, like a fucking, that'd be a money match. Bible should have ended that way. So, otherwise, I mean, the fights themselves, the show, I mean, outside of basically midgets and women, I don't trust any of the credibility of anybody coming off the show.
Sure.
And, you know, you're bringing forward, oh, wow, Mike Ricci's going to be back. Like, these aren't just names that you mentioned there. These are names from, like, kind of recent seasons that nobody watched in the first place.
Sure.
It'd be like a network saying, well, you know, all these shows kind of failed, so let's just put them all on the same night. Like, no, like, that doesn't work. You just don't bring them back. They suck. So, whatever. Gives a shit. It'll be something to kill time on Wednesdays, usually.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to see what Junie Browning looks like in 2017. Tim Kennedy has retired.
I wish I had a drop board or some shit like that. I'd be playing celebratory music. Maybe I'd just play, Taps. Taps would be good.
For me, it seems like the right time. He's been fighting since 2001. I don't know if a lot of people realize that, but he's been doing this for quite a while. He's coming off that bad loss to Kelvin Gastelum last month where, you know, Gastelum's kind of sort of a welterweight. And the type of guy Kennedy, you know, usually a top 10 middleweight most of his career, should have been able to beat, you would think. But it wasn't even really a close fight. And Kennedy looked old, and it probably is time for him to go away.
It was actually a very similar to BJ Penn and Yair Rodriguez.
Similar, yeah.
Just as far as, like, a guy in, like, his late 30s had been away for a couple of years coming back and fighting a dude who at one time you would have thought he could beat this guy and just getting schooled.
Right. Now that Kennedy is retired, how will you remember this fine soldier?
Objective is, like, a fight – just as a fighter, I never thought – nothing he ever did impressed me. I never saw him as being really dominant at any one area of the game. But, you know, well-rounded enough and a very – I hate to say it, but a relatively intelligent fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. The kind of guy who's, you know, you would never put in a Hall of Fame. He'd be the classic Hall of Very Good. And outside of the cage, just the guy – that's the only reason I know he won't come back to fighting is – he's got so much weird shit going on. He's an aggro male type, and I don't get people like him. I never will. And they're always like, I always joke this, people like Tim Kennedy that would prevent me from ever being elected to anything because he would in theory fit a lot of like my natural constituency, but I would just look at him with such contempt. I'd be like, I don't want your vote. You wouldn't vote for me for the right reasons. Like, he'd be like, oh, Jesus thinks I should do it. Like, no, not Jesus. I'm not cutting your taxes for Jesus. Come on, damn it. Just stop it. Don't you understand the principles of liberty as enumerated by Bastiat and Hayek? No. Oh, shut up. Oh, fuck you. Oh, fuck the military. Fuck you all. And he did some shit in the military, and he just made sure we never forgot it. But he really did do good stuff in the military, I think. He killed bad dudes. He also probably killed children on that occasion, so... it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, Kennedy has claimed to be a libertarian. which I always found amusing when he joined Double M Triple A there. But now that he's not fighting anymore, he can focus all his attention on Double M Triple A. That'll be nice.
In his defense, I don't think of him as a libertarian, because I think of libertarians as being intelligent and well thought, but just kind of like the nerds in the back of the room. Like, we know how this actually would work, but nobody's going to really listen to us because we're dorks. He seems to me like somebody that read Anne Ryan, Fountainhead or something like that. He was like, yeah, this is real objectivism. It's awesome. It's like, no. But in his defense, libertarian just simply wants to limit the amount of government intervention. Individuals freely collecting amongst themselves to negotiate would have nothing. There would be no issue with that whatsoever. And a true laissez-faire capitalistic society, which a libertarian would want. And I mean, so because that would be prohibiting, and that would be the state then stepping in to stop individuals from forming a contract with one another. So therefore, a true libertarian would not be opposed to a private union. That said, Tim Kennedy joined a union he didn't know existed, and then when he found out what it was, left it, basically, because I don't want to play hardball, and then he retired from the sport, taking away any leverage, and who gives a shit, you're a meathead. Go hunt Bigfoot and Hitler, you whack job.
In the rumored fight department, I don't think there was a USADA story this week, unfortunately. Those are always one of my favorites to talk about, but we always have this rumored fight segment seems to happen.
We have a real fight segment too, right?
We've got a few things to discuss here. But first, Tyron Woodley's been making some noise recently. In an interview, he mentioned that Nick Diaz turned down a welterweight title fight with him, and rumors are that Diaz also turned down fights with Robbie Lawler and Matt Brown. I'm guessing it's over money. Nick probably wants $1 million for a fight, and he's not going to fight if he doesn't get it. He's probably living comfortably now off the Anderson fight and the GSP fight, and he's in no rush to start training and getting punched in the head. Do you see Nick coming back this year? And if so, who's he going to fight if he's already turned down a welterweight title fight that he clearly doesn't deserve, a fight with Lawler and a fight with Matt Brown? Like, what's he looking for?
If he was really offered a title fight, and who really knows, I mean, that's really, I'm all in favor of money fights. I know it's a business first, but between Cerrone and Maya and Woodley, come on, dude. Like, that's really, like, that's when that'd be as bad as creating 15 interim titles in 3 months. Like, that's really not a good thing. But I definitely think he comes back this year because he got his license back and he didn't have to. And he went through and paid for all that stuff and got it taken care of. So he went through that process already. He wouldn't have done that if he didn't really care. And I think that with the new ownership group looking for money fights above all else, and then maybe that's why this fight was offered, because WMEI 97.8 doesn't understand that that's not a really good long-term business move. But we talked about it the other show about, you know, if Ronda doesn't come back, are they going to be desperate for draws? And here you got Nick, he's a draw. We know he's a draw. Mm-hmm. He's and he probably looks at his brother what he got with Connor, and he's like, fuck that, look at that kind of money. Like, I want to get money like that now. I can't let my little brother make more than me. And he's right. You know, I think good for him for playing the leverage. And let's face it, for as much as the screw-ups that the Diaz look like at times, they always seem to come out on top. You know, Nick held out, and what did he get? How did they reward him? Anderson Silva. So, right. You know, and Nate talks shit, and people are like, you're not going to fight? Oh, they got Conor McGregor twice. So,
right.
And, yeah, I mean, these are guys that can – I really do think that, in a weird way, they're like your traditional high-level athletes where the money – like, most guys get so rich, like baseball players, that money doesn't mean anything. I talk about this all the time, that, you know, it's all about counting. I don't – the Diaz brothers, I think they're past the point where money means anything just because they have such a low standard of lifestyle. Like, they don't need a lot. They just want a good bicycle and some mats to roll on. So now it's all about, am I being respected? And, you know, they're cholos and all that shit, and they'd tell you first, they'd be the first people to tell you they are, and now it's all about respecting them and their crew, and that's why they get in fights inside of cages, after fights inside of cages.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Nick is, like, giving him an immediate title shot is pretty much ridiculous. We talked about, like, the last time BJ Penn won a fight. The last time Nick won a fight was in 2011.
Was it BJ Penn?
Yeah, and it was BJ Penn. He has one win in the UFC since he came back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean...
He didn't even finish Penn. He beat Penn by decision. Then he lost to Condit. He lost to GSP. And granted, Silva... I mean, that decision was overturned and it became a no contest because of Sylvan's clear liquid in a blue vial. But...
Callback.
How do you...
You don't justify that. There's zero way to justify that by logic, other than
it's too much. It's too much of a leap for me.
It's a huge leap.
I'm with you. Book the fights that'll make money, but you could give them other guys. Like, just renegotiate with GSP and run back Diaz and GSP. That thing does over a million buys. It'll do over a million buys. Both of their returns after several years off, they've got that feud built up. They could do that fight, and it would be huge. You don't have to give them a title fight. Like, unless they already offered him Matt Brown, and they already offered him Lawler, and they're like, all right, let's try giving him a title shot. Maybe they were desperate and trying to see what he'd be willing to take, when really it's probably just money and a good buy rate. Like, come back, GSP.
Like, if I'm, well, the GSP thing's gonna be complicated because of other external issues of ego. I can see
GSP just wants more money too. That's both what they want, and it's like that fight draws. It'll draw. It will still draw in 2017.
But who knows how much they really want? I don't know. But like, I can see why he would turn down Matt Brown. Like, Brown just lost to Cerrone, and. Like, I mean, I think it'd be an amazing fight, but like, if I'm Diaz, I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to come back from Matt Brown. Robbie Lawler, that'd be a huge fight. I can kind of see the mentality in his head, though, because he's like, fuck that. I already knocked that dude out. I'm not going to fucking fight him. I already beat his ass. Like, I want somebody new. Turning down Woodley, I think that if that's true, again, it's just pure ego for him. I don't know. They're the Diaz brothers, though. Like, they're just going to do weird shit, and, as dumb as it all is, even though my brain says there's at least three people that are not just more deserving, but are all equally deserving. Like, the welterweight division has three people that are like 1A, 1B, 1C. Like, no other division really has that kind of glut at the very top. But even with all that, like, I probably on fight night, if you know, think about a fight going up to the week, leading up to the week. If it's Woodley versus Diaz or Woodley versus Thompson, I'll probably be more interested in Woodley and Diaz. It's a new fight, and also just, it's a Diaz. Like, it sucks to say that, but I mean, as hardcore as it gets, and I don't know, the Diaz, they just create and generate excitement, and that's important to me at this stage of my life.
While we're sort of on the topic of Tyron Woodley, did you see that ESPN interview? It was like a dual interview with him and Wonder Boy talking about their fight at UFC 209.
No.
Woodley basically came out and said, I don't have the quote right in front of me, so I'm kind of ad-libbing this, but he essentially said he's the worst treated UFC champion in history. And a lot of fans don't like him because he's African American, essentially. He said it on ESPN today. And he wasn't saying like the UFC was racist or anything, but he felt like he had been mistreated and that Wonder Boy doesn't respect him and all this stuff. And that basically people in the UFC were racist. He didn't come out and use those words exactly, but he intimated that. You should definitely check it out because it's gonna make some noise if it hasn't already.
He's been on that kick for a while about, like, sure. You know, like, you can see at UFC 205, like, he was very clearly, like, anticipating that the fans were going to boo him, and whatever chance he had to be cheered, he just went out of his way to preemptively be like, ah, you guys want to boo me now, don't you? It's like, he almost, like, became more of a heel than I think anybody cared. Because, like, right. He'd be like, you guys are all going to boo me now when I talk. And I'm sitting there going, I don't think anybody really cares, dude. Like, you're just there. Like, you're worse than being booed. So your career is actually better now for being booed. It is interesting because you know, on the heels of her national treasure Meryl Streep and her commentary about immigrants and MMA and UFC. UFC really, again, we not to give it too much credit, it is cage fighting, and the fans at these shows are fucking morons. Like, I'm hopefully catering to, like, the 0.5% of the MMA fan base that's not a douchebag, but that's it. Like, it's a high percentage of douchebag to non-douchebag ratio there. That all having been said, UFC fans have been for and against black fighters a lot, and a sure. lot of it seems to usually be for the right reasons. Like, they liked Quentin Jackson. Why? He was entertaining and funny and all these things. They liked John Jones for a long time. Why? Because he was a nice guy. He was beating up muggers and then winning world... Like, he beat up a mugger, returned a person, old lady, and then won a world title after he'd already won another fight all in the same month. Like, he was like a superstar and people liked him, and now they don't like him. Why? Because he's a fucking dickhead who's drinking and driving and getting into car accidents and shit. Like, and then you look at, like, Anderson Silva. They didn't like him at first. Then over time, especially after the jail thing, he became one of the biggest stars in UFC history. So I think with Tyron Woodley, it'll probably play out about the same, you know, as people get to know him, because, like, he doesn't have an outgoing, gregarious personality, so it's really difficult to get to know a guy like that, and all people really know about him is what they see inside of the cage, and while he wins, sometimes he looks like a badass, and sometimes he doesn't, you know, sometimes he just has grind-em-out fights, and it's going to take a while for that kind of personality to get over. I mean, Matt Hughes was a white guy from Illinois, and that people didn't like him for a long time. Like, you couldn't...
Even at the end, people didn't like him because they thought he was cocky.
And he was a dick. And he was like one of those weird dicks, you know, like a crooked one that goes off to the left a little too much. In that, yeah, I knew he was a dickhead, but I kind of always, like, admired Hughes because he didn't fake it for the camera. And in his mind, I don't think he actually really ever thought that he was being a dick to people. It was more just like, hey, I give my guys shit, they give me shit, I'm giving you shit. Like, I don't ever really think he was malicious. He was just like an oblivious bully, but the problem is he's still a bully. So, in summation, fuck you, Matt Hughes, and Black Lives Matter, but Tyron Woodley's doesn't yet.
One way not to get fans and to become more popular is to call them racist.
And to whine, you know, about how nobody likes you. As soon as you start, like, whining about, like, oh, nobody likes me because of something, it's like Hillary Clinton. You know, it just creates this level of unlikability, and so much so that a douchebag like Donald Trump is, like, there. People are like, well, you know, Trump's a dick, but Hillary's just, like, acting like people don't like her, and then they call him a sexist. It's like, no, she's just an unlikable person. She, you know, in person, I hear she's very gregarious and nice, and I believe it. She doesn't translate to TV. Not her fault. Maybe it is. I don't know. But so, you know, Tyron Woodley is the MMA Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with Woodley, too, is...
Because just like Hillary, he technically won the fight in some respects at UFC 205 because there was two draws and one win. But he didn't actually get to have the win, just like Hillary. Right. So, yes, this is... Oh, I'm just on fire tonight with these things. I'm just... It's going to be Metaphor City coming out of every orifice. This is great.
The other thing with Woodley, too, is when he got that title shot against Lawler, nobody was clamoring for it because he was coming off a split decision win over Kelvin Gastelum a year...
Like 18 like, months prior.
Yeah, like way... Actually, yeah, it was 18 months.
Because he was supposed to fight Johnny Hendricks, and Hendricks had kidney stones when he didn't make weight. And Tyrone's just like, I'm just going to wait for a title shot. And that somehow worked, and he got a title shot.
Right, which good on him. But it wasn't like he had much fan support going in. Nobody even remembered him. It was like he didn't have like this signature couple wins to get a title shot, like Garbrandt or somebody like that, where it's like, this dude's killing everybody. Let's see what he can do in the shot. You were just kind of like, Tyron Woodley. And it wasn't based on the color of his skin. It was just like, he hasn't done a lot to convince you that he's warranted this title shot. He sat on the shelf for 18 months and kind of baited his time and ended up getting a shot. It wasn't one of those things where everybody's like, this dude needs the next title shot. I can't wait to see him fight Robbie Lawler. Nobody felt that way going into that fight.
And what's really funny is that I think that he's actually connecting with people now because he had the brilliant performance against Robbie Lawler, you know, doing what nobody really thought he was going to do. And then having, you know, what in any other year would have been like a fight of the year level fight with Wonder Boy, and he showed a lot of heart in that fight. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm way more interested now in Tyron Woodley than I have been in a long, long time. And I hope he doesn't shoot himself in the foot by, you know, if you tell everybody over and over again, like, anything can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you tell Tyron, if Woodley tells the fans over and over again, you guys don't like me, you guys don't like me, you guys don't like me, people are just going to go, oh yeah, I don't like you. And he doesn't have, like, he's not even, like, that's not even, like, heel heat where people are going to want to watch him get beat. Because who wants to watch a guy get beat when the guy's like, oh, you guys don't even like me? And that's all he says. It's like a really in shape, super athletic, really talented black version of Tim Sylvia.
Yeah, except in better shape, maybe.
He doesn't have a scooter yet, but he'll get it.
So UFC 208 finally has a almost legitimate semi-main event underneath Holly Holm and Ronda May at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn in February. Added to the card just this week was Anderson Silva versus Derek Brunson. Seems like Anderson Silva's the guy they go to now when they're desperate to add a fight to a card last minute.
Yeah, Brunson, did he just win his last fight?
No, he lost that fight to Whitaker by, I think, knockout.
That's right, yeah.
In Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it's a random fight. I don't know where it comes from. It reminds me a lot of, you know, a lot of Anderson Silva's career is kind of winding down, similar to Randy Couture. Because I remember, you know, Randy Couture, at the end, he had a fight in England. I don't know if it was Brandon. I think it was Brandon Vera. And it was on free TV, and I remember just going, why the fuck is Randy Couture doing this? Like, this is like, you're not getting your money's worth out of this guy. He should only be in big-name fights, but here you have Anderson where fought on Fight Pass against Michael Bisping. Then he fought on, like, a day's notice with Cormier, and now he's fighting Derek Brunson on a show headlined by two small chicks getting fatter. Like, it's a weird thing, but in some respects, I wrote a piece about how Anderson Silva needs to retire, restore his legacy, and blah, blah, blah. I'll say this for him in that after the steroid failure and shit, I'm sorry, penis failure, I think there was, you know, the chance for his legacy to be tainted. I have more respect for him now than I did even before the steroid failure came out, because before that, you know, he just looked like a great golden god inside of the cage. And when he lost, I thought, all right, if he leaves now, I understand why. It's a guy who's like, I'm not going to fight unless I'm at my best. And he's a dude that's like, he's fighting because he likes to fight. And it's a side of Anderson Silva that you don't really see a lot of because he is such a showman and he's flashy and he does things. And you don't think of those types of guys as, you know, just loving the fight. But it's kind of like a Ricky Henderson type. You know, Ricky Henderson was doing independent baseball into his, like, 50s because he just wanted to play baseball. And Anderson Silva, if you're fighting Derek Brunson, like, first of all, it's a waste of Anderson Silva. Just, there could have been anybody at welterweight. I mean, they got Johnny Hendricks moving up to welterweight in January. No one didn't have Johnny Hendricks fight. At least it'd be a name or something. Like, Derek Brunson, like, I couldn't even remember his last fight. Like, I knew he kind of had a little bit of a streak going there, but, or Whitaker, or anybody. Like, if you're going to use Silva, like, I'll say that, I all respect to Silva, UFC needs to have rethought this, because, again, the dude's old, whatever name value he has goes down every time he loses, although he did, I think, increase his popularity with the Cormier fight. But, you know, you got to, you know, milk the cow for as long as until it goes dry. Don't just let the milk drip down into Derek Brunson's useless mouth. Like, put it into a bottle and give it to the town mayor and get a new lease on life.
Do you favor Brunson in that fight?
I'll say no.
Okay.
You know, you look back at it, Silva's in-ring, in-cage prowess last year, and, you know, he did obviously beat the shit out of Bisping for a while there, and you know, yeah, I thought he lost to Bisping, but the worst case scenario was, you know, very, very close fight with a guy who's a champion. And Cormier fought on 2 days' notice, and for being on, like, a 2 days' notice, I think he did about as well as any fighter in, you know, history would do moving up a weight class on that short of notice to take on the world champion. So I think he's still got some skills to him, and maybe it'll go away, but I don't think Derek Brunson's all that good either, so.
A fight that would have been fun, they should have done Lawler, Robbie Lawler and Anderson, because that would have had a little more name value, and Lawler wouldn't have to cut a ton of weight. He's fought at 185 before. It'd be a fresh match, and it'd be a fight where you're like, this fight's going to be, should be really exciting.
My friend, that is a genius idea. That is the perfect fight. Then again, who knows with Lawler? I mean, we had the perfect fight for lined up back in November, and he didn't take it. So maybe he just really does want time off. Otherwise, yeah, that's about as good a fight as you could ever make. That's like not a pay-per-view headliner, but it's something that is a semi-main event. You go, yeah, that's suddenly
especially
208 would actually look like a decent card. Because I had this theory once about Matt Hughes that people didn't want to pay to watch Matt Hughes, but when he was like a semi-main event or just like third from the top, he was such a big star that it added just a little bit of glamour and fun to the undercard, and suddenly you were like, I'm not just getting to see this fight. Oh, Matt Hughes is on this show too? Like, you were really happy because it felt like it added depth, but it was like a freebie. Like, you were like made, it's like, okay, there's a pay-per-view. And this, I don't even have to pay for this, because you always think that you're only paying for the main event. You always think you're just paying for the main event, everything else is like a freebie. So I always thought Matt Hughes was like the ultimate perfect freebie that would actually increase buys and interest. And I think Anderson Silva is the same way in this position.
Yeah, you would think so. UFC 208 now has 14 fights on that card, but one of them involves Ian McCall, so it'll probably be down to 13 by the time the show gets here.
And then 12 or 11, because there's no way anybody's staying that healthy. I mean, we only got a couple weeks. Are you crawling all over me, dog? Not on the courts. Who's a good boy? Okay.
What else is going on? Oh, Stefan Struve pulled out of his fight with Junior Dos Santos at UFC Halifax, which is a fight night card on February 19th. UFC is looking for a replacement for JDS, but that's probably not going to happen. I don't think a lot of guys would take him on a month's notice. But
they do. I think Derek Lewis said he would do it.
Did he?
I feel like he. I mean, didn't he? Well, he offered to fight Verdum, so why not fight Dos Santos? Like, that's a dude that needs a win. Otherwise, they did replace the fight, though, at least with something.
Yeah, we've got Hector Lombard versus Johnny Hendricks at 185 pounds. This will be Hendricks' first fight at 185. Lombard's kind of jumped back and forth between welterweight and middleweight. Both guys are winless in their last three fights. Does this fight intrigue you at all?
Yeah, it actually does. Because okay. I see them as two guys that are top 10 level talent at welterweight, just at a weight where they're probably going to be at their best. It's funny that, you know, oh, he's moving up to middleweight, and he's fighting a dude who's a welterweight. It's like Conor McGregor moved up to welterweight. No, he didn't. He fought a lightweight at welterweight. Like, doesn't really, like, yeah, it's a little different, and guys will fight different in different weight classes, but these two are both very similar body types. Like, it's not like you're, you know, you could have a guy like a Neil Magny. If Neil Magny went up to 185, he's got a frame where he could pack on a lot of muscle and be like a different dude, like, you know, like Anthony Johnson. He's a different size dude from when he was 170 pounds. With these two, I think they're going to pretty much look the same and just not cut as much weight. We'll see if Hendricks misses weight again. He's, you know, missed it, I think, what, three out of his last four fights or something like that, and including the cancellation. So, and Lombard's a drug cheat. So he actually should be getting smaller. I think he just kind of got ran out of 170, but, you know, I give Hendricks a lot of credit in that he just lost to Neil Magny like 3 weeks ago at 170, and he basically said at that time, I'm going up to 185, and he's immediately jumping into it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like he's waiting and taking some time off. He's like, no, I want to get in there and really prove it and do this thing. And I think for most guys, you know, the more guys fight, the better, especially guys like Johnny Hendricks, where if Johnny Hendricks has back-to-back camps, I think that second camp he'll always be in really good shape because he just gets so fat in the off season, and he doesn't stay in the gym. So when, the more he can stay in the gym and be forced, you know, the better off for him. So, I look forward to the fight. I think Hendricks is going to beat Steroy McSteroidson. But, yeah, I mean, actually, Hector Lombard had 8 fights in the UFC, only 3 wins. So, and he's like 40-something, so he's a little old.
Yeah, they both look a little old. This would have been a really fun fight 5 years ago. Another guy who's going to be making his return to pay-per-view is Conor McGregor. He's going to be doing a 1-hour, I put this in quotation marks, unscripted interview at Event City in Manchester, England on Saturday, January 28th. Ariel Helwani is going to be interviewing McGregor in front of a live audience. 5,000 tickets for the event have been sold, and it's sold out. And this will be broadcast live from NotoriousLive.tv, which is McGregor's website. It's going to cost about $5 USD.
That's brilliant. That's actually, you know, I was laughing at it all. I was kind of amused, yeah. Like 5,000 tickets were sold, but
there's also like there's some bands, there's some other entertainment and stuff. It's not just a sit down with him, but
I think it's actually a really brilliant move on Conor's part because obviously he's not going to take any damage or get hurt. Keeps his name out there a little bit.
Sure.
And if he wants to build his brand, this is the kind of thing – this is how you build a brand. It's probably a loss leader on some level. But, you know, you go out there, you offer people something that's it's just you, and you put it at $5. Like, at first time I heard, like, pay-per-view, I'm like, I'm not going to fucking buy this. When I hear $5, I'm like, it's $5. Like, that's not – like, you can't get food at McDonald's for $5. It's like, $5, that's a – it's like a large coffee, or if I drink coffee, a large something at Starbucks. So I can see people being like – you know, I mean, for $5, watch Conor talk shit for an hour, and you'll kind of have, like, that added bonus where, like, you know that he's going to do something. It's not going to just be Conor trying to be subdued. Like, he's going to be putting on a performance, and people love watching Conor. And, again, for $5 on the internet, I can see people just being, maybe. I don't think it'll do any business just because I don't think anybody will know it's happening. Life's all in you buy sizzle, you don't buy a steak. But, hey, you know. I think it's a great idea. If you're going to try it, I think he's doing it the smartest way you can if you're going to go through with what he's doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not going to buy it.
Fuck you, Ariel. You hack. You fucking joke of a hack. You go from the UFC. Yeah, make your joke.
Ooh, can you hear that music? Because I can.
I don't have any music playing.
It must be on my computer and my headphones. I found it. I figured it out. I was trying to read up about this interview with Helwani and McGregor, but and then there was a pop-up. We're good. We're good over here. What were we talking about? Helwani, right. So he basically was getting paid for the UFC and covering them and not making anyone aware of it until he was banned from all the shows and cried about it and spilled his guts on his show for 2 hours and talked about getting choked at an event because he was asking Chuck Liddell too many questions, greatest story ever.
We'll get back to that. I'll lose my train of thought. I'm going through UFC TV, just looking for something, a fight to put on the background, and they have these collections, and something's fucked up with their system because they got, like, random collections. They have, like, Ultimate Dan Severn. Okay, fine. And they do, like, the face-off two guys. They show their fights. They have an Ultimate Brian Caraway. What the fuck? Why is that on there? What the fuck?
I don't know. Maybe it was part of Misha's new deal. I don't know.
I mean, they're an Ultimate Brian Caraway right below Ultimate Aljamain Sterling.
That is odd.
Like Ultimate Forrest Griffin and Chuck Liddell. Yeah, that makes sense. So sure. Anyways, go back to the joke.
I didn't really have a joke plan, but essentially he was getting paid by the UFC, and now he's going to get paid by Conor McGregor, you would think. You wouldn't think he would fly all the way over to England on his own dime and not get paid anything for this. But on Twitter, he claimed he's not making a penny on it. But
I muted it.
Sound like John Anik?
Yeah, Johnny Hendricks or Stephen Thompson.
Yeah. Then it wouldn't have been Anik. It would have been, well, maybe it would have. Yeah, it was a fight night, right?
That was a show that was going to be a pay-per-view, but they made it a fight night. Now, that's if that right. was to happen, those two would have fought for an interim welterweight championship.
Maybe middleweight. Who the hell knows?
I'm not even joking, because think about it. Stephen Thompson's... No, he fought Rory McDonald next, but that's the way the UFC does business now.
Times have changed.
Yeah.
One guy without a fight scheduled is heavyweight champ Stipe Miocic. He is another disgruntled fighter complaining about pay. Seems to be the new trend lately. He says he feels that the UFC has taken advantage of his kindness. And he was particularly upset when he learned that Alistair Overeem earned $200,000 more than him in their last fight, where Miocic was a champ. It was in his hometown. He drew a good portion of the crowd and had this spectacular knockout win over Overeem, although Overeem says he submitted him, but that's a different story. Does Stipe have a right to be upset, or should Overeem have made more money for that fight than him?
Everybody makes what they make. And, you know, it's a very tautological statement, but Overeem got paid what he was able to argue for, when he made his deal, he's a bigger star than Stipe. To me, the thing to really take away from this is Stipe says he got paid like $600,000 and Overeem got like $800,000. And he knows this because of the financial disclosures from the Athletic Commission. Does Stipe not understand that people get paid more than what's disclosed by the financial commissions? Does he not understand the concept of points in a pay-per-view? Does he think Conor's only making $3 million? That, to me, is the story. Stipe wants an extra $100,000 or whatever. I'm the UFC pick. Yeah, here you go. Here's $200,000, you dumb shit. You're the heavyweight champion of the world, and you're not getting points in the pay-per-view? Come on. And if you are getting points in the pay-per-view, then just shut up about the other $200,000, because this should be, I don't want to say a drop in the bucket, but creamer in the coffee.
Yeah, I found that very odd, too, because essentially, when you become champ, I don't want to say you automatically get points, but I was always under the impression you automatically got points. And sometimes the challenger would get points, too. Like, I'm sure Nick and Nate and these bigger stars have been around a while and negotiated points whenever they main event a pay-per-view.
I think that anybody that's not on their first contract, pretty much, is almost always going to get points in a pay-per-view. It's just one of the things that they build in. And then they can be like, look, dude, we're giving this great deal, man, Nick. You get two more wins and you're going to be making $1 million. And if
right.
Otherwise, we're going to pay you $25,000. So, yeah, sucks to be you.
I hope you win.
Yeah, I
found it a little odd, too, because you would assume he got points. But
you know
that part of the story hasn't really been revealed yet.
It sounds like it taught him a lesson, though, because he wants to renegotiate and do something next for his next fight or whatever. Like, he's just saying, I want to be paid fair. And when I hear guys, you know, Stipe doesn't strike me as somebody that's going to get super, like, crazy with his money, being like, I'm the champion, I'm going to do everything. Like, he's still a part-time firefighter.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Which is weird. Like, he even talked, like, my next fight would be, like, in May. And he made a comment, like, to bring up specifically that it would not be in Cleveland. I'm like, dude, do you really think you're going to fight in Cleveland forever? Like, if I'm him, I would never fight in Cleveland again. Because I was there right. for that thing, and... He'll make more money in his career. I don't think he'll ever have a greater moment in his life, his professional life. I mean, he defended his title in his hometown in an awesome, badass fight and knocked a dude the fuck out and became and the place erupted for it. Like, that's the perfect, like, that is, you don't do any better than that in life. That's as great as it could ever be. Even if you go on and win 5 in a row, you're Stipe Miocic. You're not going to have some giant 2 million pay-per-view buy in your future there. Like, that's as good as it gets. And, hey, that's a pretty damn good goal in life. I'd like to fight here in Chicago, make $1 million and win and defend my world title in front of my 18,000 screaming fans. It probably won't happen, but there's still a chance it probably won't happen. So, and I'm smarter than Stipe. I mean... Yeah, I'm smarter than him. Yeah, I got a lot of other defects, but I'm still smarter than him, so that counts for something. Fuck you, Stipe, you damn heavyweight champion badass.
Essentially, he said, they told me, talking about UFC management, it was the best deal they could do. And I said, oh, okay, great. then to come find out it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the worst negotiation I've ever heard in my life. Hey, oh, thank you. Just take the first offer and say thanks. That's awesome.
Hey, Stipe, like, come on. You sound like a woman negotiating. And I don't even mean that totally sexist.
I'm pretty sure that's sexist.
No, because studies have shown that women are far less aggressive in negotiating for raises than men are. They don't press. Okay. They don't like to sell themselves. It's too aggressive, whatever it may be. It could be a complete social construct or whatever. But men are way more likely than women to go into a boss's office and be like, you know what, dude? I demand this much more money. I earned it, and be like fierce and fighting for it. And women are more like waiting for it to come along. So, Stipe, I'm saying you're a giant woman. You're almost as big as Gabby Garcia.
Similar.
Holy shit, they are almost the same size.
They are. It's pretty close. Yeah, I think we talked about that before. She's with, like, not the most recent fight, but the fight before that, where she was fighting, I forget, she was like a former, like, women's football player or something.
Oh, the chick from TNA? The black chick?
No, there was a couple in between.
What I like is how you say things like, oh, I forget, as if anyone in the world should remember Gabby Garcia's opponents.
How can you not? They're such freak shows. I mean, those are like five of my favorite fights ever. Anyway.
She has five fights?
I think something like that. Yeah. Maybe four. But either way, they're always awesome. Where were we going from there? I lost my train of thought. But here we go. Nate Diaz is back in the news again. Another Diaz brother. He's gotten a boxing license in Nevada, kind of following the lead of Conor McGregor. Why would he do that?
Because he's following the lead of Conor McGregor.
Okay.
Like, that's the thing. He probably saw Conor and said, yeah, I'm going to do that too. And, I mean, everybody thinks Conor's going to fight Floyd. And let's just, for argument's sake, say that a court declares that the UFC only has the rights to broadcast MMA fights, and they can't stop guys from fighting and boxing. If I'm Conor, Nate, fuck this. Let's just do a boxing match. We're just going to box anyways. If you're Conor, you definitely just want to do a boxing match. And I guess, you know, I think it'd be a huge draw on pay-per-view. It'd be weird. You wouldn't have the UFC's promotional vehicle, and boxing kind of sucks to watch. But I could see, you know, it'd be a weird way for fighters to get around UFC contracts, which is why I don't think it'll ever happen, but I don't know. Everybody's getting a boxing license. I mean, shit, what's his face? Super Kalo, I think it was, that made the joke that Ronda applied for a boxing license, and my first thought was, really? Like, I'm like, is this just the thing they're doing? I'm like, oh, it's him. Okay, never mind.
That was pretty funny. I don't think it means much. I don't really see him taking a boxing fight. There's people out there who say, like, there's some clauses in the Ali Act that might allow, depending on how you argue it and what judge you get in front of, might allow guys like Conor and Diaz under these UFC deals. They might find the deals to be too restrictive, and they might be able to fight.
If they were to apply the Ali Act, it wouldn't just allow them to fight boxing. It would pretty much invalidate their MMA contracts.
Right.
Like, just the nature of it. I don't think that they're going to apply the Ali Act because, one, I mean, hey, good for Dana. He's friends with Donald Trump. Trump would block any – would probably legitimately block anything. And I also don't think it really applies in the same way. I mean, it's a different era. Boxers were being taken advantage of, but, I mean, mixed martial artists are also, but I don't know, man. Just I don't want the sport to turn into boxing. The more power the fighters have, the worse the sport is. Like, I want them to get paid as much as possible, but, like, I want it to be through a strong union, not through strong independent contractor status. Like, that's just, like, it's counterintuitive, and people don't want to, like, do it. But, dude, you guys are winning on everything right now. Just all you need is a little bit more of the giant pie. All you're going to end up doing is taking a huge pie and turning it into a bunch of little individual pies, and there's only going to be like five individual pies instead of 13 people eating from a big one. I don't know what is up with my fucking metaphors tonight, but they're fucking awesome.
This Saturday, we've got Bellator 170, January 21st, coming from the Forum in Inglewood, California. Some people call that Los Angeles. We've got Tito Ortiz versus Chael Sonnen, and one of the bigger fights in Bellator history. Obviously, both guys are pushing 40 and clearly past their primes. We've got Sonnen at 28-14-1, taking on Tito Ortiz at 8-12-1. But again, two big names. This is Sonnen's debut in Bellator. They've both been talking a little bit of trash, going back and forth. Sonnen's been getting the better of that, and he will probably get the better of the fight come Saturday night as well.
Yeah, you know, this is Sonnen making sure that he wins one for his dead child. Oh, wait, no, that's not how this one goes. I don't really know what Sonnen's fighting for.
Money.
Yeah, it's more important than his dead child. It's funny, like, this fight's happening. It's just kind of snuck up. I'm like, what the fuck is this week? And I go, oh, that's happening. So I knew it was coming. Look, it shows the power of the UFC. Because if these two were fighting the UFC, it would be a big deal. This is just kind of like, maybe like an okay-sized deal if you know MMA. Otherwise, I know that they had a special on Spike, I think, hyping it. But you can't find it on the fucking internet. Like, way to go. Like, UFC always has that shit up on the internet. I know, because I steal it and use it. I don't steal it, but I use it for free content all the time. And, like, I was looking for Bellator. I'm like, these guys don't have jack shit out there. Like UFC always will put up a bunch of old fights or lots or something, and I know they don't have lots of old fights of Chael, but they have enough Tito, and they'll put the fights up for you to watch. They put the hype specials. They'd have they're embedded and things like that. And yes, Bellator's going to be a smaller scale, but they don't really have anything, and it's such a waste. I mean, it's really a waste of Chael. It's not a waste of Tito, because Tito's fine, I think, in his own small doses, and I think he just works as just a name. Like, you want to just see Tito Ortiz, his name is Tito Ortiz. Where Chael, it's like Connor. Part of what you want to see is the shit talking. I want to see him talking shit, and I haven't seen it. Like, I'll probably go out of my maybe I'll have to go out of my way to find it, and that's really not a good thing. So, I mean, the fight itself will be fuck if I know. I mean, we also. It's been going around. I'll probably post it tomorrow. The Chael Sonnen just absolutely smoking Tito back in college and wrestling. Just embarrassing. But, look, Chael's a middleweight. Tito's a light heavyweight. And they're both big at those weights. So Tito's going to have a big size advantage. Sonnen's a better overall fighter. He's a better striker. The wrestling is somewhat even. I don't know how the size works. I think submission-wise, Tito is far ahead of Chael. But I don't know. It's fucking Tito. Like, he's going to have 13 things break between now and Saturday. They can use his fracture. I don't know. He's going to fracture his coccyx or something like that.
I can't believe neither one of them have got hurt. I can't believe, like, the fight's still happening. I had strong inklings that Tito would get hurt in camp and just basically retire. He is saying this is his retirement fight, so he's supposedly never going to fight again, unless they offer him Shamrock again or something. Maybe he'd come back for that. But
well, if he's got the money, it's perfect. Because he's, you know, Southern California guy, fighting in Los Angeles, last fight, big, you know, Inglewood, the Forum, that's a big, it's a legendary arena for sure. Against a fight that he can win and would probably be the last high-profile fight where it's not a joke. He's not fighting, you know, Ken Shamrock for the 15th time. Or like, you know, these are two dudes who are relatively evenly matched. This is the kind of fights that they should be in.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary that Tito's been more active than Sonnen. I mean, Sonnen hasn't fought in almost 3 years, and he got destroyed by Rashad in that fight, if you remember his last fight. And that was, like, Rashad's last impressive win. So you wonder what Sonnen's got left after being on the shelf this long. I feel like we kind of know where Tito's at. He hasn't really changed much in the last 4 or 5 years. Obviously, he's slowed down a little bit. But what's Sonnen going to be like at 39? Maybe a little cleaner than he was in the past, although Bellator's, you know, testing isn't super strict. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I like Sonnen. I just think – I don't like Sonnen. I shouldn't say that. I like Sonnen in this fight just because I think he's got better wrestling than Tito, and he'll be able to take Tito down, and Tito's not going to be able to do much off his back. But –
I would be surprised if Sonnen takes Tito down with enough. I don't want to say if he takes him down, but if he's able to take him down repeatedly and keep him there. Tito's a big dude, and you know he is still a wrestler. I think the real thing is that Tito has no power in his hands. He's never been a good striker at all. He doesn't like getting hit in any way, shape, or form. So I can see Sonnen just outboxing him a little bit. It's funny, you know, just, what I have seen of Chael is it's been awesome where he's just basically like, yep, I used to cheat a lot, but now I know what the rules are, so now I won't be cheating, and I'm telling you all this. I'm sitting there going, you went from, like, strict rules, like, you have, like, no drug testing. You're going to be fucking jacked to the gills on this shit. Like,
yeah.
It's I mean, just bless Chael for making a mockery of the whole damn thing.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Bellator that's weird is, obviously, USADA's following the WADA code and is stricter than these state, you know, the state commissions. But I mean, out of all the states, I always feel like California is one of the better ones. They were the ones that changed the weight cutting, and they seem a little more progressive. So you got to wonder what either guy is doing, actually. But
well, they haven't failed yet, so they're good to go.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it really is.
This is going to turn out to be a no contest. That'd be great. Sonnen wins but fails. It's a no contest, and they can do a rematch. That'll be
fantastic. I mean, Chael Sonnen, awesome. I think we've said it before. If you haven't, I'm saying it now. He's the Donald Trump of MMA. The dude is just so smooth that taking a scandal and be like, oh, what's the big deal? Yeah, no, I did that. Yeah, I did that. I filed for bankruptcy, but I'm just playing with it. I just used the laws. I just used the rules. And Chael, it's the same way. It's like, I cheated, but I'm just playing the game like everybody else. I'm just doing what everybody's doing. But now I'm good. And it's just like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we'll move on to the next dumb thing. You say, yeah, I fed that. You see when he fed the bus a carrot, and you're like, oh yeah, we all kind of laugh. And meanwhile, this dude's laughing his way all the way to the bank.
Sure is. Although he's probably losing a lot of money on Submission Underground. Also,
no, he's not. That's all sponsored by Flo. So they're the ones losing money on that shit for sure. Dumbass.
In the semi main event, we've got Brennan Ward versus Paul Daly. Also on the main card is Hisaki Kato versus Halleck Gracie, which is a freak show fight if I've ever seen
that. There's going to be a whole lot of people in attendance booing the living shit out of Halleck. Isn't Halleck the one that, he fucked around with Metamoris.
Right.
Is he the one that everybody thinks is shit? And yes. L.A., that's Eddie Bravo territory. And, you know, they already don't like all that shit. So I think Halleck's going to come out to a thunderous booze.
In a fun featherweight fight, we've got Emmanuel Sanchez versus Georgie Karakanian.
I'm looking forward to this for many a reason.
Go ahead.
For starters. Oh, the first reason is that Manny Sanchez, El Matador, was supposed to fight for the featherweight title back in December, got injured, had to pull out. It's never easy for a man to pull out. You got to respect him for that. He trains at Duke Rufus, and he's a really good guy. Like, he puts in a lot of time. He actually coaches the kids program in jiu-jitsu there. He got his brown belt just a couple months ago from my friend Daniel Vanderlei. And he coaches the kids program up there. So, you know, he's a really solid, a little too Jesus-y on Facebook, but otherwise a really, really solid dude. And Karahanian is Armenian. So, like, I'm going to be doing play-by-play on this shit somehow. Like, I'm working, like, 13-hour days, not including my commute right now, and I'm working weekends, but I'm going to be there to watch this shit. So, go Manny.
All right. And then closing out the main card is Derek Anderson versus Derek Campos. So pretty solid card for a Bellator show. It's got a little more star power, and obviously the main event's a big deal.
And the main event of the undercard of Bellator, which will be airing live and not exclusive on halfcredit.com, is main evented by Shinzo Machida, Lyoto Machida's brother.
Oh, yeah, he won his last fight. I think this is his second fight in Bellator.
It is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right, so that's Bellator. So we talked MMA. Is there any stuff we need to talk about this week?
It's your show, dude. Carry away with it.
You're kind of a baseball guy, right?
That's an understatement, but yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know everything about you.
You should.
Look, I don't know if I want to. Tim Raines, Jeff Bagwell, and Pudge Rodriguez were all elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Do you feel they are more deserving to be in the Hall of Fame than Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Manny Ramirez?
Nope.
Okay.
I think that all three of them deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I think
the first three or the latter?
Bagwell, Raines, and Pudge for getting in. Pudge, to me, was probably the best catcher of his generation. Mike Piazza had better offensive numbers, but he was a shit receiver. Pudge, you know, he was a hell of a receiver there behind the plate and really just controlled the infield. Like, he was a really good defensive catcher, and he also had some outstanding offensive seasons as well. I mean, to me, Pudge Rodriguez was no doubt Hall of Famer. Jeff Bagwell, same. Bagwell's an interesting one in that he reminds me a lot of Joe Morgan. Very well-rounded. Had a lot of home runs, but didn't hit like that 600 mark or 500 mark, but also had like 250 stolen bases and a really well-rounded game overall. Had some steroid tainting because he had giant biceps and wore a small shirt. Also because he played in the late 1990s and they were all using fucking steroids. And Pudge had the same thing. Harold Raines, I mean, that dude is, again, another guy that in a different era would not have gotten in. But now that with advanced statistics and appreciating especially the importance of on-base percentage and different aspects of the game, for him it was all on-base and his incredible speed. I mean, the dude stole 90-plus bases in the season, 743, I think, in like 8 years or something like that. At an 85% success rate when anything over 70 is good, so I mean, he was outstanding on the bases and added a lot of value. So you kind of saw three dudes get in who are not your traditional Hall of Fame guys. Like, Hall of Fame guys are usually Randy Johnson or Greg Maddux or guys with multiple MVPs. I think Pudge actually may have won the MVP once. But, you know, guys who just, like, are the dominant figures of their day. And Pudge was, I think, respected a lot as the dominant catcher of his day. But Bagwell and Raines, for sure, never had that super dominant reputation. They were just very, very, very good consistently for a long time. And they all belong in there. But again, you know, it kind of shows a little bit of the joke of the Hall of Fame in that there was always rumors of Pudge being on something. There was rumors of Bagwell being on something. And Tim Raines was legendary for stealing and sliding headfirst because he kept a vial of cocaine in his back pocket and didn't want to break it, so he would slide on his stomach, and people could see him doing bumps of coke in the outfield during games. If that's not a fucking performance enhancer, nothing is. So, you know, what a madman he is. So, but again, you know, setting that all that stuff aside, three dudes deserve to go in. There's probably at least another 7 to 10 I could make a strong case for already on the ballot, not to mention with the guys coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about – because the thing with me that drives me crazy about the Baseball Hall of Fame is I just assume every guy from that era was on something. Like, to be really good and to be elite, you were probably bending the rules a little bit. But you just didn't happen to get caught. You didn't take the test at the right time, or you were taking something that couldn't be tested for back then, whatever it might be. So guys like, you know, Clemens and Bonds and Manny, clear Hall of Fame players, But it's like they're probably never going to get in. I think Manny
Bonds and Clemens will.
You think?
They polled at like 55% or something like that.
Yeah, they were near 50. Yep.
And that's a huge jump up. And they got five more years of eligibility. Most people that get those kind of numbers only increase their numbers and eventually get in the Hall of Fame. And as the electorate of the Hall of Fame gets younger, I think they're going to get in. I don't think Manny will, but they will.
Do you think Manny won't get in because he's not good enough or because he failed three times?
I think that in a different era, Manny would be a no doubt just on his counting, you know, his back of the baseball card stats. People would be like, look, 600-plus home runs and arguably, you know, one of the two or three greatest hitters of his generation. I mean, Manny was a fucking stud at what he did. Won World Series. I mean, even when he was kind of, people thought he was done and went to Los Angeles for that one half season. I remember he went and he hit like 45 home runs in 20 days or something like that for the Dodgers. It was just insane. He's doing this tear, and as a Giants fan, I'm like, what is going on?
Well, the other thing with Manny, too, was, I mean, obviously, I watched some Red Sox in my lifetime, but he just seemed like he wasn't even trying and didn't even give a shit. Like, especially when he was, like, out in left field there, like, balls would be bouncing off the wall and off the Green Monster and all around.
He was listening to music.
He was, but it was like, and he was still so good. He still was so freaking good, and it was like he wasn't even trying. Like, Bonds and Clemens had that competitive drive, like, they wanted to be the best, and Manny was just, like the saying in New England was, oh, that's just Manny being Manny.
Manny being Manny, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so to me, he's like he's unbelievable because, and it was like he always looked like he was 20 pounds like out of overweight and not really in shape, and he could hit like nobody I've ever seen, and so clutch too, like him and
Big Poppy, most clutch man I've ever.
I called David Ortiz. I always screw up and just out of habit call him Tito Ortiz just because I'm a freak like that.
To me, he's the most – I don't believe in clutch as a general rule. He's clutch. What he did in 04 with the Yankees, the most clutch performance I've ever seen in baseball history.
He's unbelievable too. But for me, it's like even if those guys got caught, they were still the best guys of that era. Even if everybody was juicing, they were better than everybody else that was juicing. So just let them in. Like, I mean, that's my mindset.
Well, I completely agree that you should just judge guys on their era, especially right now, because there was probably from the 50s until the late 80s or so, I think baseball was basically the same game. Like, there were better athletes that showed up. We had, you know, expanded player pool of black people, Latinos, Asians. But the game, like, what people valued was the same. As you got into the 90s, and especially today, people value things completely differently. Like, that's the reason Tim Raines is in the Hall of Fame, is because today, people look at what he did and go, I really appreciate a guy that could get on base at 400 and steal me 70 bags, advance from first to third 30% more than somebody else, and play a good right field. Like, we see the value in things that weren't traditionally valued now. But, like, to me, the thing with Manny, it's like he did actually fail, which is the one thing which is against him. Because, like, Barry Bonds never failed a test.
Right.
Roger Clemens never failed a test. So if people want to, they can kind of be like, oh, yeah, I don't think he was always on these things. And there's also, I think, set aside Clemens, because pitchers are going to be judged against pitchers. When I think of, like, Manny versus Barry Bonds, and yes, I'm a homer, I'm a Giants fan, I think to me the thing that stands out is that there's a large portion of Barry Bonds' career, like, basically about 70 wins above replacement, when about 55 or 60 is a Hall of Fame career, where people say, I don't think he was using anything. And then you can see the clear changes when I think he just discovered protein and weightlifting, but it was framed.
What made his head so big?
Protein does. Look, just when you get older, like, your ears get bigger, some people's foreheads get bigger. Like, it's just, it's something that happens.
It was sudden.
But, you know, I think people look at it and go, oh, wow, everything changed, but he was a different ball player. And prior to, like, I'll just say for argument's sake, prior to Barry Bonds using steroids, he was just the all-round best player in baseball. He was, and it wasn't just hitting, it was fielding and base running. He's the only guy with 500 home runs and 500 stolen bases. Whereas with Manny always had a reputation in left field as being garbage. And he was a little overblown. He was a serviceable left fielder. He made some, like, he would make mistakes that were really, like, blatant.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed obvious, like they were just too big and like high profile, but he actually was pretty solid, I think, for the most part in his left field career there. But he was never Gold Glove and all that shit. So I think people, and he never stole bases. He was just a guy that hit the baseball. And mm-hmm. that's nothing against that. Ted Williams was just a guy that hit the baseball, and he's a god. Barry could point to parts of his entire career and be like, look, I'm not just this guy that is jacking 73 bombs in a season. I would do 40-40. When I was 23 as an MVP, he should have won probably 7 or 8 MVPs as opposed to 5. He won multiple. I mean, and he was just, yeah, going back to his against your era, I mean, for fuck's sake, there's your era, and then there's Barry Bonds. Like, you have to go, you literally have to go back to Babe Ruth to find a baseball player that was that far ahead of everyone else in their era. And Babe Ruth didn't have to play against black people and a whole host of other things. Like, baseball is a game of inherently losing. It just happens. Every at bat, the odds are against the hitter. You're more likely to see a guy make an out than to see a guy hit a home run or even get on base. Except for when Barry Bonds came up to bat. I mean, in his later years, his super-duper prime, he would get on base more often than not, and he would see one or two pitches a game that he could hit, and he'd either jack him out of the park or jack him down the foul line and just miss. Like, he was one of the few guys in baseball that they always cut away to watch him at bat, and I've never seen that for anybody else, and it was really special. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and so should Roger Clemens. Clemens probably used later in his career, but I think, like, Bonds was a guy that was a Hall of Fame guy and then looked at the landscape and said, hey, everybody else is doing it, I'm going to join in. The problem is both Clemens and Bonds are dickheads. You know, people just don't like them for being dickheads, and that gets held against them. Like, if Barry Bonds was really friendly and made funny jokes, like, you know, if he was Chael Sonnen or something like that, he'd be in the Hall of Fame already. But, you know, he was a dick, and there's no doubt about it, he's a dick. I know why, because he grew up with his father being mistreated by the media, he thought, even though his dad was actually just a drunk. But, he holds every record in the world, and not just by a little bit, by a lot. And he would have had another 25 or 30 home runs at least if baseball hadn't blackballed him. So Bonds will, should, and hopefully will get in, and I think Clemens will. And then you're going to get to guys like Curt Schilling, who probably should get in, but who've hurt their career since they've left. Like, Barry Bonds just keeps his mouth shut, and he looks like more of a contender for the Hall of Fame. And Curt Schilling talks about how he wants to, like, lynch members of the media, and suddenly he doesn't get as many votes. It's weird.
Schilling says he wants to run for Senate in Massachusetts against Elizabeth Warren. I don't think he's going to fare that well.
She's
in
from
that
Massachusetts?
Contest.
Of course she's from Massachusetts.
Obviously. Come on.
Of course. There's all kinds of Indians in Massachusetts. Duh.
Actually, they're Wampanoags. I mean, like, that's a thing, like, in a town over from here.
Okay.
Native American tribe. Well, this is where the Pilgrims landed first. They landed on Cape Cod, then they went to Plymouth. Little known fact.
Wow. Actually, that's so fucking awesome, because everybody in the world, but they didn't land on Plymouth Rock, but everybody, I bet everybody from Cape Cod's like, actually, they landed here first. I guarantee you, every single person you know, whenever anybody mentions the Pilgrims, like, actually, it's always that same tone with the actually of, like, I'm telling you, you're wrong. Actually, they landed here at Cape Cod first.
Well,
we just don't get credit.
They decided Cape Cod was shitty, and they went to Plymouth instead. But
is Plymouth in Maine?
No, Plymouth is in Massachusetts. It's like 20-30 minutes from where I live.
Is it nicer than Cape Cod?
No. No, the Pilgrims made a mistake. In one more bit of history here before we close out the show, one of Barack Obama's last acts was to grant clemency or reduce the sentence of Chelsea Manning. Any thoughts on that? That seems like something you'd be into.
I try to keep an open mind and sense of, I know I'm a right-leaning libertarian type, but I really look at a lot of what Obama's done. Like, I think of it overall as a presidency, it's good. I think he did his job. I think that, I wasn't a fan of Obamacare, but it was his thing. He got it through. He did a really good job, I think, of being a really good president, just as far as the image he shows. Like, even if Donald Trump is super successful, like, he's always going to be Donald fucking Trump. Whereas President Obama, like, yeah, there's a part of me that I'm the nerd that will, after Friday, be saying President Trump, because I always respect the title. But that having been said, I've seen a lot of, like, basically cowardice out of Obama in the past couple of weeks, because there's shit like, oh, all of a sudden they're not going to drill anymore in North Dakota. But you know that Trump's going to undo it. And you didn't do jack shit for 8 years. And you're only doing it knowing that it'll delay things for like a month. But he gets to be the big hero and be like, everybody, I stopped it. And then the evil Donald Trump did it. And like, this stuff with Chelsea Manning, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, this poor guy, I actually legitimately feel for him, because I guarantee he's got a lot of issues to work through in life, but because trannies do. But, like, seriously, Obama, within the past 30 days, has come out, said he's levying sanctions against Russia for supposed hacking. Meanwhile, he's commuting the sentence of a dude who grabbed military secrets. And I actually think that Manning probably did the right thing. I think he acted from a good place in his heart. Her heart, whatever, its heart.
Do you feel similar with Snowden?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I think Snowden, like, I'd have to really look at what they do, because it's one of those things where you hear so little about what was actually released, what their actual clearance is. It just sounds like they got secret files, they released them. But there is something to be said for civil disobedience, and I think that Manning, you know, he basically, again, it's funny, all of a sudden WikiLeaks isn't credible, except for Manning is kind of the guy, that girl that put WikiLeaks on the map, and everybody loved it, and it just feels very partisan in that, oh, he hurt President Bush, so I'll let him go. But Julian Assange, or whatever, they hurt Hillary Clinton, so they get punished. And it's very weird. Like, if anything, Manning has more of a duty and probably should be punished harsher than Julian Assange for what's happened, because Manning was in the military. He took an oath and admitted what he did was against the rules. He acted in his conscience, and I respect that. And I wish or hope that I would have the courage to do the same if I was in those circumstances. But, again, Julian Assange isn't even a U.S. citizen. You know, he's just a dude out there and doing whatever. And he's probably, again, violating all kinds of shit. Maybe being manipulated by Russia. Maybe not. I mean, I honestly don't really know. My instinct says, if they're telling me it publicly one thing, it's not the truth. Just because, like, why would Russia do something so blatant, not ever get caught, and then, like, a week after the election, then they get caught after it doesn't mean anything and nobody can do something? It just, plus, nobody really can tell me what they did. Like, what did they do? Oh, they showed the world what Hillary was doing? Oh, they didn't tell us about Donald Trump's evil shit? Do we need anybody to remind us of all the dumbass, evil, horrible reasons why Donald Trump isn't qualified to be president? God damn. They probably looked at him and was like, yeah, we were going to release this memo, but then he grabbed that chick's pussy on Entertainment Tonight. So we were like, fuck, we got nothing on this one. So, like, I mean, they can... Oh, even if the whole thing with, like, the pissing hookers thing is true, that wouldn't have hurt Trump. I mean, come on. The man bragged about grabbing pussy whenever he wanted. Multiple bankruptcies. Proudly called Rosie O'Donnell a fat pig and wouldn't back down from it. Mocked a crippled dude by going, and then says, I didn't really know he's crippled. Yes, you did, you liar. Did all kinds of horrible things. None of it fazed him. So, like, I don't think there was anything that WikiLeaks could release about Trump outside. I mean, nothing would have stuck to him. The dude is genius in his way. So, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing with Manning is that I don't think prison's the right place for Manning. I think that Chelsea needs some very serious psychological help. I tend to believe that of a lot of people who are considering a transgender transformation. Not all of them, but a lot of people probably need more guidance than they're getting. I don't think prison's the place for it at all. And I think there's a lot of things in this behavior. I say this on as a couch psychiatrist playing, you know, lazy boy Freud. Oh, that's a good term. I like that. You know, between signing up for the Army and then getting in the Army, then betraying the Army, then admitting you betrayed the Army, then going to prison on a guilty plea, then transforming from man to woman. Like, there's just a lot of stuff going on that's, like, very aberrant behavior. And maybe it's all innocent, but it feels like it's more connected. So I don't think prison's the right place for him. They said, people were like, oh, he's already trying to commit suicide twice. He'll never make it the rest of his sentence. Like, that's not how it works. Like, if you should be in jail, you can't, like, oops, I almost killed myself twice. People are like, well, fuck, John Wayne Gacy, you know, he's trying to hang himself in prison. I don't think he's going to make it the rest of the way. Let's let him go free. No, like, that's just not how it is. So, at the end of the day, I don't even really know what he did. Like, I know, I have a general idea of what Manning did, but it wasn't obviously so overwhelming and horrible that it shook America to its core and changed the course of human events. And in that sense, like, I don't think he didn't kill anyone. And I think that we have way too many people in prison anyways, so...
Right, and I mean, the question is, how long should you go to jail for something like that, or be in prison? And it's like, it's one of those questions where different people are going to have different opinions. What is treason, and how much damage does this do? There's a lot of people on the right arguing that this isn't will encourage more people to commit treasonous acts and leak information because they're only going to go to jail for 7 years or however long.
No. First of all, 7 years of jail for a crime that doesn't give you any chance to make a lot of money ain't worth it. Like, I would do 7 years of jail for trying to rob a bank.
You can't get much money from banks anymore.
I know, but the average bank robbery was $22,000 in 1984. I think it's like $39,000 now. But if I could make like a million on it, I read a lot of stuff on this stuff from Judge Posner, dickhead. But yeah, I mean, if I could make $1 million, yeah, I'd totally try all kinds of stuff like that. But like, I'm going to release some files on military stuff that people are doing that isn't kosher, and the American people will probably not give a shit after 3 months. Then 7 years later, I'm still in prison because I would get pounded in the ass for it. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to encourage anything. I think
weird thing because it's like sometimes you want a whistleblower and somebody to say, hey, what this is fucked up. We shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. And if it's not getting changed, sometimes you got to go to the press and sometimes it's an honorable thing. And other times it's like, holy shit, now all this information's out there, whether it's intelligence or whatever it might be, whatever could be embarrassing for the government can get out there, and they might not want it out there.
The one thing I've noticed, and again, it's conjecture, it's just, you know, anecdotal, but on Facebook, is that the people that are, I know, who are very, very politically active support what's happened. And the people I know that are very politically active tend to be libertarians or far leftists. So I'm very actually proud to know people from all walks and ways of life. I'm a cosmopolitan man. No one believes that. But then I see a lot of people I know, and like to a person, and these are people that some of them are big time Republicans, some of them are big time Democrats. But it seems like anybody who served in the military isn't just like upset by this. They're really pissed. Like, it's not just like, I disagree with it. It's like, I can't believe it. This is disgusting. I'm shaking my head. I don't know what's going on in this country. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, so, like, those dudes and dudettes, they all seem to have, like, a little different perspective. And being the coward that I am, I can't really comment on what military people would feel. But I can also say that it doesn't really matter what they feel, because what matters is the objective law that was written by civilians, which is what should be done. And fuck you, military people. I mean, you do your job, but you're bred and created to be loyal and do all this stuff. And sometimes the greatest soldier is the one that does have the balls, or in Manning's case, no longer the balls, to step out and tilt at the windmills.
All right. I think that covers it. We did MMA and we did some stuff. So I think that's a good show here. We're at 2 hours now. So
I thought this should be an hour, but yeah.
It could have been, but sometimes you tend to go on. Or I ask a really long, open-ended question about espionage.
I like how you try to bring that back to like partially take the blame. We all know I'm just an asshole who won't shut up.
On that note, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff. My name is Matt. That was Mike. We'll talk to you next week.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all. Bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope.